Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Do you have a question you'd like to hear me ask a particular guest? Or a question to pose to our listeners for a call-in, maybe? Visit the You Produce section of our website and send us that question. Go to WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehrer Show. So if you haven't seen Ratatouille, it's about a French rat with dreams of becoming a great chef. If you did see it, you may remember a particular scene involving the withering restaurant critic Anton Ego. Yes, that's really his name. And for those who haven't seen the movie, here's a description. The critic, voiced by Peter O'Toole, has a character-changing moment when a taste of ratatouille, which you probably know it's a kind of a peasant stew of tomatoes, eggplant, and zucchini, triggers a powerful childhood memory. And this led us to wonder about the connection between taste and memory in real life, what some might call the Proust effect. Remember Proust and his famous Madeleines? Why does eating certain foods hit us on an emotional level? Well, joining us to talk about this mysterious connection are Amanda Hesser, food editor for the New York Times Magazine, and Dr. Marsha Pelsha, associate member of the Monell Chemical Senses Center, a scientific institute dedicated to taste and smell research. It is located in Philadelphia. Amanda, Marsha, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you.
Marsha, what goes on in the mouth when you actively taste something?
Well, we talk about taste, but what goes on in the mouth is that we're both tasting and smelling a food. As we all know, the nose and the mouth are connected, because if somebody makes you laugh when you're drinking milk, it comes out your nose. And so during chewing and swallowing, little puffs of air get up to the olfactory receptors, the smell receptors, by the back way. But we're not consciously aware of this. The whole eating experience is referred to the food on the tongue. But, you know, if you pinch your nose when you're eating a lifesaver or a jelly bean, it's very difficult to tell what flavor it is. You can tell that it's sweet, but you can't tell whether it's orange or cherry or whatever.
Right. My grandmother lost her sense of smell, and she was aware that she had lost much of her sense of taste. But why are taste and smell closely linked with emotion and memory?
Well, the sense of smell especially co-evolved with the part of the brain that is in charge of emotion, the limbic system. In fact, sometimes the limbic system is called the smell brain. So it's almost impossible to smell something without also judging it, liking it, or disliking it.
So how important is it that we already know what something smells and tastes like to have an emotional reaction to it?
It is important because the emotional reaction probably depends on our past experience with it. So our emotional reaction will depend on what that experience was.
Right. And if you don't know it, then maybe what you will react emotionally to is, oh, this is something unfamiliar. This is something foreign.
Right. And all other things being equal, people like familiar things more than unfamiliar things. You know, there are some sensation seekers who travel in order to try new foods, but most people have to get used to new flavors before they really like them.
That's why all these comfort food restaurants are opening up in New York. Listeners, tell us about the food you'll never forget. Does the taste of a greasy hamburger bring back memory of a summer love? Does the smell of garlic sautéing remind you of your dear grandmother? Are there any foods you won't eat because of a bad memory? Call us at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or post a comment on our webpage, WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show, and you don't even have to be a French rat. Amanda, you wrote about courting your husband, New Yorker writer Tad Friend, with food in the memoir, Cooking for Mr. Latte. Are there any dishes that, when you taste them, remind you of that courtship?
Yes, absolutely. Well, a latte, for one thing, because It was something that we both drank, but you know, I sort of had a problem about what time of day, because he would drink lattes throughout the day and evening, which in the sort of food world you're not supposed to do.
Not only that, how wired was he by 9 o'clock?
Exactly. But given what Marcia just said, I mean, he was not a what you would call a sensation seeker. Although I feel like New York City is sort of filled with them, and that's why the restaurant culture is so interesting. I think that taste and memory, taste is the sort of most powerful way you have of remembering an event. And sort of capturing it and preserving a feeling you have about a memory. And I think that's sort of one of the fun things about sort of writing about food, is because you're kind of constantly paying attention to those and exploring them.
Yeah, and you also edit a column for the Times Magazine called Eat Memory.
Yes.
Where you ask writers who don't normally write about food, like George Saunders, Colson Whitehead, come to mind, to contribute stories about a significant memory associated with food. How do you direct the writers?
Well, I ask them, I feel like everyone has a good food story, but I try to get them to avoid the my grandmother's meatballs were the best ever kind of story, the sort of sentimental food story, because I feel like actually, some of the most important moments of your life happen when you're eating, because it's the sort of rare time during the day when we gather and we talk about things and things happen and around the table. But I don't, I'm less interested in, everyone mm-hmm. has those kind of like warm, fuzzy memories. But I think the more interesting stories to tell are the maybe sad things or that happened over the course of a meal, or something funny that happened in a restaurant. You went to Jean Georges and the waiter spilled your dinner on you. I mean, it's not all kind of sentimental and serious.
I think Barbara has one like that. Barbara in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Barbara.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, what you got?
I don't know why I cannot eat tomatoes. People ask me all the time, and it sort of links up with a kind of a memory. I can eat any other kind. I can drink tomato juice, I can eat stewed tomatoes and tomato sauce and so on, but just not fresh tomatoes. And it has something to do with a cold, rainy feeling, as if I kind of remember this, but I don't know if it's true. My mother took me out of school on a cold, rainy day, and we went into a luncheonette and had lunch, which included a tomato. And I think that's the source of it, but I can't.
Right.
Sure.
All right, Barbara. Thank you for that. So, Dr. Pelshaw, is there anything people can do to get over a memory-related food aversion?
Well, probably the best thing that they can do is to keep trying the food over and over again. But I should say that according to Paul Rozin, who's a psychology professor who studies food at Penn, tomato rejection of raw tomatoes is very common. And it may also be based on their texture. You know, of course, tomato products are the basis of some of the most popular foods in our culture, like pizza. But the raw tomato has that slimy stuff around the seeds. It has the seeds. It has sort of the mealy flesh. It has the skin. And although tomatoes appear on just about every sandwich and every salad in the United States,
they have a lot of things that would turn people off.
And you know, about 20% of the adult population doesn't eat raw tomatoes.
Oh, that's so interesting. Oh, I didn't realize that. Yeah, I like all that various texture in a tomato.
I
guess not everybody
does. That's exactly what
I
was thinking.
Well, here's a post on our website that reinforces that smell is very related to memory as well. This says, when I was 16, I went to Ireland and had the time of my life. For some reason, I wore Old Spice fresh deodorant on the trip and not my usual classic Old Spice. Years later, I was standing in a store contemplating what deodorant to buy, picked up the Old Spice fresh, and tears came to my eyes as I could suddenly recall so much I thought I'd forgotten. So I guess, Dr. Pelsha, memories can be triggered by food that that were long lost.
Yes, yes. Memories can definitely be triggered by food, and food-triggered memories or odor-triggered memories tend to be autobiographical as opposed to the kind of memory that we use in school, which is we call semantic memory in psychology.
And it's not just about people, apparently. Myra in Oceanside, you're on WNYC. Hello, Myra.
Hi, Brian. It's Mira.
Mira, sorry.
That's okay. I listen every day, if you can't tell.
I
just wanted to comment that this is a principle that animal trainers use all of the time to change the emotional states of an animal, like a dog, who's in an anxiety-producing situation. We can use food to take them back from fight or flight and to create calmness. And it's almost as an anti-anxiety sort of effect in the animal. And it's very helpful. It's something that animal trainers use across the board all of the time.
Interesting. Thank you very much. Now, we have two on our website that kind of go in the same direction. People looking to recover a taste that they think they remember from childhood. Here's one. Every summer, I must have at least one hot dog. I am searching for a hot dog that recreates for me the taste of one I had as a child at our annual Hebrew school picnic on a nearby farm. Here's another one. I am perpetually hoping to taste a hamburger that will trigger my memory of the bowling alley burgers I ate during my summer visits to my grandmother's trailer park. Amanda Hesser, does that ever come up with your writers?
It doesn't that often, but I feel like it's a very common phenomenon with people, is this kind of like lost flavor from childhood. And
is it real or is it imagined?
Well, that's what I'm wondering. And Marcia, I'm wondering if you could comment on that, because I've always wondered if it was just either that our sense of taste diminishes over time and therefore it's hard to actually recover that specific flavor, or if it is actually something that is just imagined.
I have one too. Yeah. The best slice of pizza I ever had in my life was the ones I used to have as a kid at Scotty's Pizza on Francis Lewis Boulevard in Whitestone. And I've been looking for that taste. And if I knew what the spice was, I would make it myself. Or am I making this up?
So much of cooking, though, is about the environment. So, I mean, they do say that, like, pizza in Naples is what it is because of the local water, you know, and that it's all the local ingredients, and therefore you can't actually recreate it here. And so it seems to me like that must play into it at some level. But on the taste level, maybe, Marcia, you can comment.
But there are sensory changes with age, so that was a good insight. That is a possible reason that it's difficult to reclaim those memories from childhood.
Molly in Belmar, you're on WNYC. Hi, Molly.
Hi, I love your show. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm calling to say that my mom is Lebanese and my dad is Irish, and my father was the complete meat and potatoes man, and my mom, of course, is so exotic, and the food always brought me to places that I wouldn't have been able to go otherwise. You know, none of my other friends had that kind of food on their tables, but the funny part was my mom calling my dad in under the pretense of changing a light bulb or something and shoving food in his mouth because he wouldn't have tried it any other way, and just watching that happen and having him suddenly eat things that, you know, he would never have had before, too.
Thank you, Molly. I guess you grew up on hummus pot roast, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
Thanks a lot. Listen, let me squeeze in Andrew in Brooklyn. Andrew, we have about 20 seconds for you.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
This is Andrew. I was just thinking about the your show today, and I was just telling to your other guy is that when I came to the United States in 1975, I had some corned beef in the refugee camp, and then recently I went to a diner, and just when they brought out, I ordered some corned beef, and they brought out some, and just the smell of it hit me to the time when we were in the in the refugee camps, and how we line up, and it was just a great thing.
Andrew, we're going to leave it there, and we have to leave it there with Dr. Marcia Pelsha from the Monell Chemical Senses Center in Philadelphia, and Amanda Hesser, food critic for the New York Times Magazine. This has been great. Thanks a lot.
Welcome.
Thank you.